stations promise outstanding content, but when it's time to deliver, they fall flat on their ridiculous faces. Enter LA Talk Radio, a cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk station that delivers totally original content without any commercials. Log on to latalkradio.com and get involved with the best talk radio station on the internet. LA Talk Radio, we say what we want.
The morning show that's on your side. But then again, so is appendicitis.
And now it's time for the best morning show on radio, broadcasting live from the palatial studios of LA Talk Radio in Studio City, California. Get ready for Sam in the Morning.
Good morning. Welcome to Friday. It's May 31st, and we're back with you here. Another week is over. Another month is over. And I, for one, am happy because we're closer to the summer. Thank you for joining us, May 31st, and I'm joined in the studio by a very beautiful woman named Liz. Welcome to the show, Liz.
Good morning, Sam. Good morning, California.
I did get your name right, right?
Yeah, Liz isn't too difficult.
Yeah, you can't really mess that one up, huh?
No, especially, you know, being British, named after the Queen, you're not going to get that one wrong, right?
Really? That's true. Is that who you were named after?
I don't know. I don't know whether my mother had the royal aspirations, maybe, to link me to the Queen, but it's definitely a very British name, isn't it?
Elizabeth. Yeah, I guess, yeah, Elizabeth is a British name, definitely. Yeah, you're actually the third British woman to be here in the past 2 weeks, and I think it's a British invasion all over again.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know? I think when Simon Cowell came over to this country, yeah. I think the rest of us just decided to jump on board that ship, too.
There you go. But do you find that people really love people from the UK here, right?
Yeah, I think our accent is different, so a lot of people just want to hear us talk.
Yeah, exactly. It sounds so formal and proper.
Does it? Do I sound posh?
Yeah.
Well, I'm actually from Wales, so let me tell you, it's a little bit more real. I guess it's, especially after a couple of drinks, you'll hear my dulcet tones be a little bit deeper like that. Yes. So Welsh accent's very different.
That's cool. Now, I mean, you know, English accent is like, I don't know why it's always considered like I don't know, like, look, it's Star Wars, everybody's got a British accent, you know, and in all these movies where somebody's important, they have a British accent, you know, and
well,
it's really funny. Or like, if you're like Russians or something in a movie, they'd start talking like British, to distinguish it from the American English, you know.
I think there definitely is a stereotype with it. Like the Russians, I think they'll always play the assassins or the bad guy. Like my friend is an actor called Vladimir. He's in Jack Reacher with Tom Cruise, and he's kind of really, you know, he's so Russian, and he's like the bad guy. So yeah, there's stereotypes with accents, aren't
there? definitely.
And it's funny because you guys think I'm posh, and I really wouldn't place myself there at all. Can you actually differentiate between the different accents in the UK?
No.
So you wouldn't be able to tell Scottish to Irish to Welsh
Well, Irish I think you can tell because it's so distinct, you know.
Yeah.
But as far as Welsh and all that, no, I wouldn't know that.
No. Well, I suppose if we came in here with really strong Welsh or Birmingham accent, you may pick it up very fast.
Probably,
you start laughing.
Yeah. No, that's true. But I think, you know, even people that live outside the U.S., they don't really notice Southern accents and things like that until you're here and you hear that it's different from the traditional accent, you know.
Yeah.
So, you know, so it always depends on what, you know, what you're looking for, I guess, you know. But I like accents, you know, and some people are really good at them. I'm not good. Do you do any any impressions?
It's so funny. I go into meetings with producers and directors, and they say, Liz, can you read this in American? I'm like, if you really want me to read this in American, I might as well go out of the room now.
Yeah.
And I'll write you a letter.
Yeah, and get yourself an American girl. Wow. So tell us a little bit about yourself. Now, you're currently, what are you doing? Are you in entertainment?
Yeah, I'm hosting a show for the UK 3 days a week, and then I fit around that films. Mm-hmm. So I've just done 3 films, 2 this year. I've been really busy. I did a film called A Winter's Rose with Billy Zane, and then I just played the lead as a ghost that makes everyone kill everybody else.
Really?
In a film called Fasanu, which was great.
Oh, how lovely.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, and I just finished the new Jack the Ripper movie, which is called The 7 Faces of Jack, which was really scary. But I actually play everybody thinks that I was one of the victims that Jack killed, but I wasn't.
Oh, okay.
Because the British girl manages to escape that. No, I played I played one of the reporters, so I pop up on screen and keep giving the latest news on what's happening. So it's kind of, it's a new version. Jack the Ripper happened in London 125 years ago. This is an LA version in current times where somebody wants to imitate Jack the Ripper.
Really?
Yeah.
Very interesting. Yeah. So this was shot here in LA, huh?
Yeah, this is shot all in LA. Beautiful scenery, like all the downtown lights at night and helicopter moves with cameras over the downtown. Really professional. Really looks good.
Very nice. So do you think it's going to be like a major release or...
I never know. I just turn up. I just do the day's work. I just film. I do my project. I go home. I don't even think about things. It's also, you know, when you, I think LA is so busy and so fast. There's so many different opportunities. You go on auditions and you don't even think about that audition anymore. You leave the room. You leave it in the room with the casting director. If they want you, they call you. If they don't, they don't.
Right.
So you forget about things. And even when you're on a film set now, I think you just do what you can. You enjoy the people. You enjoy the experience of being able to use your talent and then just leave and think, what's next?
That's true. Yeah. Except you'd like it to be big, obviously, you know.
Yeah, but it all comes. I think the thing with entertainment is, you know, I've been in the industry now, I want to say 14, 15 years. So I started as a child, really, Sam. And I can say, you know, everything happens step by step. I get some girls that message me on Facebook through the UK and say, Liz, I want to be doing what you're doing. But you have to appreciate, you know, this is a, it's a slow business. Everybody thinks overnight success. I've never known anyone really get overnight success. Unless it's from a reality show and then within a year, 2 years, you've disappeared, you've gone. So you make your money fast. I think really entertainment now is about building slowly. I mean, it takes a British person easily 6 months to a year to put stuff together, to get a talent visa, to get into America.
Really?
And to be of that level, to get an O-1 talent visa, you have to be at a level of extraordinary talent in your own country. So you have to be famous or you have to be reputable. So it's very hard for anybody to come to LA. So it's a, it's, you know, it's a 5 year, 10 year process for sure.
Wow.
Yeah. You got it easy, Sam.
Yeah, I guess I did. Well, I came here in the 70s. It was a lot easier then, you know. You can just come as a tourist, get married, and you're done, you know.
Yeah, not anymore.
Yeah, well, actually, today you can still do that, you know. I mean, people do that. But yeah, I mean, there's a lot of scams going on, you know, with this thing. And I don't know that I could do that, like marry someone for money just so they can get their papers, you know.
Well, it's funny because I know people that did have got married over here. Yeah. Wrongly, and I guess they pay somebody about $10,000, $50,000 is the going rate, get married, and then have to go through the immigration meetings. But you know what happens is people fail the immigration meetings.
Yeah.
'Cause if you're not in love, they work it out quickly.
Yeah, if you don't live together and you don't know about each other and so forth.
Yeah, I know more stories of people that have failed at that process
really?
Than have actually, I mean, in... you know, mutual friends, or I know somebody of somebody, and the stories I hear.
Right.
Unless maybe people are talking about the bad situations, and they never talk about the good.
Yeah.
I mean, so I just got my green card literally, what was it, about 2 months ago?
Well,
but I went the long way. I got an EB1 green card.
Really?
So you have to prove you're something extra for America.
Okay.
You know, that's not easy.
Yeah, well, okay, so you're whetting your appetite now. So let's hear why you got a visa where other people don't. How did you... How were you important enough?
I think it's, firstly, I'm Welsh. You don't have enough Welsh people in America.
Oh, okay. So they give you a visa just for that, right?
No, not at all. I think you've got to really prove things, you know. It's like I hosted some major game shows in the UK for ITV and Channel 5. So I really worked my butt off, if
really?
I can say that word on radio.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, obviously being an ex-Miss Great Britain and I bought the business as well. I think those things help. It proves I'm an entrepreneur. I just got a jewelry deal, so I'm going to have my own range of jewelry, which I've been working on for about 6 months with Downtown Jewelers.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we're going to be selling that back to Europe and into the UK. So I'm creating jobs for Americans, and we're going to be making money, you know, for Americans and for, you know, I think at the moment, whenever you can add something to society or community, I think people appreciate that, especially U.S. immigration.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Well, I don't know. A lot of people, I think, come with stories, too, but they don't get that opportunity, you know. So Now, what's that about Miss UK now? Let's go back and understand. Well, that's probably the reason.
maybe everybody knows you.
Maybe
I had a male immigration officer. He liked me. I don't know. It's not an easy process. It took 6 months to file and get all of that. Now I have it for 10 years, a green card. So Miss Great Britain is obviously a huge background for me. It's funny. My mum was a huge feminist. So saying the word beauty pageant when I was 18 to my mum was just forget it. Standing in a bikini or a swimsuit, forget it.
That's interesting because usually the mothers are the ones that push the girls, right?
My mum was the opposite. My mum doesn't want me in show business. My mum wants me to be a nice little teacher living in Swansea. My mum's so sweet. You know, she's been so selfless. You know how parents kind of bring you up and say, do whatever your dreams are, go wherever you want to go. My mum's not pushy at all. She'd love to have me at home.
Wonderful.
So, a friend of mine was a model, Louise, and she just took me to her photographer one day. He started taking photos, sent me to a model agency called Models One. The Cardiff spokesperson for Models One, I guess the booker, she wanted me to pay to go on a modeling course, and I went, nah, that's not going to happen. Mm. And so she said, well, if you enter Miss Wales or Miss Cardiff, we'll give you the whole modeling course for free. Mm-hmm. So I thought, oh, that sounds good. So I just went along. I did Miss Wales 94 first time, and I think I came about fourth or fifth.
Nice. So that made you feel good.
Yeah, it was so funny. I was such a surfer girl at the time. I didn't wear makeup. I stood on this pageant stage with a surfboard as my talent.
Really?
No makeup, no high heels. And I just looked at the other girls in sparkly $1 million dresses or what it seemed at the time. And I just thought, okay, I got this wrong.
Yeah.
And I learned very fast. I thought, right, let's get a black sequin gown. Let's get high heels. Let's put rollers in my hair and makeup. And then I went on to Miss Cardiff and I won Miss Cardiff, which was the first one.
Uh-huh.
And I was a Swansea girl, so that didn't go down well because that's a different city.
What's a Swansea girl?
Swansea. I'm just from a city called Swansea.
Oh,
Wales.
I see. Okay. Yeah. Sounds like an African city or something. Yeah, like...
No, major city. It was the copper industrial center of Europe.
Oh, really?
And then when, of course, no copper and coal was being exported anymore, I guess Swansea went downhill. But now it's, of course, doing well on tourism. One of the most beautiful cities, if you ever go to the UK. We're in one of the national TV commercials right now for our M&S, which M&S is like one of the major food supermarkets.
Uh-huh.
And it's all about picnics on the beach, and Swansea has the most beautiful beaches.
Uh-huh.
So I'm a big supporter of the first natural area of outstanding beauty.
Sounds good, but you guys don't have a lot of sunshine there. So what's it like to go to the beach?
We get sunshine June, July, and August. So is the perfect time to go. Yeah.
I see. And the beaches are nice, you say.
Yeah, they are.
Just on par with the nice beaches in Europe and things like that?
Do you know the difference is when you go to the south of France, you get, of course, the very elite, beautiful beaches with the yachts pulling up like Saint-Tropez, and you get the restaurants on the beach, and it's fabulous. Whereas in Wales, the beaches are, especially Swansea, they're all empty. If you want to go to the quietest beach, the most, I was going to say derelict, that's not the right word. If you want to go to a sparse, beautiful, idyllic,
uh-huh,
kind of feeling on your own, like a desert island, those are the beaches.
That's where you go.
Yeah. And in the summer, just so stunning. I remember as a child, we had like bottles of Coca-Cola and we buried them. And because the beach was so vast and so empty, we tried to find them again and we couldn't.
Wow, that's pretty cool. So then you went on to, so you won that one.
Yes, and then I went on to do the...
How many contestants were there? Do you remember?
Three? No, joking. I think in, Miss Cardiff 94, I think there was about 25, maybe 30 girls.
Oh, nice. That must have made you feel good.
Yeah, it was fun.
It gives you confidence and you feel, okay, I can move on to the next thing.
Yeah, you do. And you get, I think there's a slight kind of addiction with pageants. You always notice... And I always think winning a beauty pageant is something you learn, which is, it's funny to say, because you should think the most beautiful girl can just rock up that night, enter the pageant and win, but it doesn't work like that at all. It's how you answer the questions, how you stand, how you move, what you wear, your deportation. It's everything. It's a whole package. You learn it.
Right.
And they're looking for, you know, I know when I took over Miss Great Britain because I didn't think the business was being run right.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
It was like, there you go. There's my feminist mum in me. I didn't think it was being run right. So I bought it in 2006, I think it was. Was it 2005? And then sold it in 2006.
You bought what now?
The Miss Great Britain pageant.
You bought the whole pageant?
Yes, I didn't think it was being run
Where
right.
Where the so. Hell did you get the money from?
Well, the first time I owned it, this is funny. The first time I owned it, I wasn't hosting game shows at this point. So I was still trying to be an up-and-comer. Right. First time I owned it, I bought it 50-50 with a business partner. He was a fashion guru. Mm-hmm. He had a fashion empire. He would bring all the big brands into the UK, so a distributor. Right. So we owned it together, and we
Now, isn't this like billions of dollars or hundreds of millions?
No, if it was in America, it would be billions and millions. Okay. Because the size of America compared to the size of the UK. But in America, pageants are big business, whereas in the UK, they've kind of gone downhill
Got
over
it.
The last 10, 15 years, probably since the years that I did it.
So
no
then,
relation.
So then you own the pageant and then you win it.
No. I won it in 96, 97,
okay,
10
so
years before I bought it. Otherwise, that would be really
Oh,
dodgy.
Okay. I see. All right. Yeah. That's what I'm thinking. Where did she have money at 18 to buy a freaking pageant?
No, I was older than that. I think I was about 30. I was about 30. Oh my goodness, I've just given my age away. It's like 28.
No, you didn't.
No.
unless people are sitting here doing some math and
Do
stuff.
Do you know what? It really doesn't matter. I think my age has been out there now on these social websites since I was like 17 or 18.
Yeah,
so it's so
people
easy
can
to
do
find
the
out.
Math. You,
you
know.
Can find out everything about anyone anymore. You can find out people's addresses in
yes,
LA.
Yes.
It's crazy.
And who they used to be married to and everything.
Yeah.
Yeah, like divorce documents and things like that. Everything is just a click away on the internet, you know.
Yeah.
So forget about privacy. There's no such thing. You know, if you want to be involved, you go on Facebook, you go on Twitter, you have a website, people know everything about you.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah. So I now, I'm no longer part of Miss Great Britain, but I love the company, obviously, because it launched me and put me on that platform to do radio shows and TV shows in the UK. I now still own a pageant called Miss British Empire, which is kind of, is quite ironic because it's the newest pageant out there, but it's probably the oldest title, you know, as in British Empire.
Right.
It's kind of all disappeared now, the British Empire, isn't it? Which is funny. Yeah. So old British Empire would have had states like Rhode Island and Providence and loads of places all over the world.
Uh-huh.
But it's just the UK, that title, at the minute.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but the UK, I think United Kingdom does refer to all the other countries that used to be in the empire, no?
No, it's the UK stands for the United Kingdom of Great Britain and Northern Ireland.
Okay.
So the UK is only those four territories.
Okay.
Whereas Great Britain actually is only three territories.
Mm.
Yeah.
Okay.
And
wow,
the British Empire is still, you know, would Canada and Australia still be in that? I guess so.
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah, I mean, the British Empire has left so much
debris.
Impression. Yeah. Debris too. Yeah. But yeah, all over the world, you know, and India and Japan and all these places have a lot of British influence still.
Yeah, Burma,
you know?
Hong Kong.
Right.
Yeah. We once upon a time ruled the waves, no longer.
Yes.
I think it's the bankers that are doing that now.
Well, I don't know. I just think empires don't last. You know, they never have. You
no,
know?
The Ottoman Empire going back in time.
Yeah, the
Roman Empire,
you know, it's all of them, you know, because what happens is you overextend yourself and you start trying to support new territories, new land, new people and everything.
It's kind of greed, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, you know, and it's militarily, economically not feasible, you know, to govern such a huge area around the world. So I think that's why empires rise and fall, you know.
Yeah, it's phases, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think China's the where everything's happening now.
Yeah, that's true. But they wouldn't even dare become an empire because they're gonna be gone, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it can't happen.
A billion
anymore.
People or not, you know, it doesn't matter.
I think it's a global empire. We're all coming together as one now.
Exactly. Yeah. The empires are economic empires now, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And wow. So let's go back a little bit. So you won that first pageant, and you decided you want to continue with pageants after that.
Yeah, I did.
Figured, that was pretty easy, you know. Let me try. Something.
Yeah, it got me a free modeling course. What will it get me next if I climb the ladder of this pageant business? So then I went on to enter the Miss. Well, it was Miss Great Britain, but it was attached to the Miss Wales universe. Mm-hmm. So everybody that entered Miss Great Britain, you covered your region. But Wales was one region back then.
Wow.
It was very different. Now, I think with the Miss Wales universe, you have to win your town or city, and it's very different. Wales has grown as one of the biggest pageant industries now in the UK.
Really?
Whereas back then, I guess, I had an easier time. Don't tell anyone.
I won't. Yeah. Now, in Wales, you didn't ever run into Diana or anything, right? Spencer?
No, I didn't. I wish I'd met Princess Diana. She seemed like such a beautiful lady and probably a blast too, you know, great conversations. Didn't meet her. Even though she was the Princess of Wales.
So it's not such a small place after all.
No, I don't think Diana really came that. She obviously did come to Wales maybe once or twice a year, but no, I never got to meet her. I met Princess Margaret.
Oh, you did?
Yeah,
okay, well.
Because we did a lot of work with Save the Children Fund, so she was fun.
Very nice. Yeah, cool. So then you moved on to, was there another pageant before Miss UK?
No, it was straight from the Miss Wales. So I won the Miss Wales Universe title, and then I went into Miss Great Britain. And that year, there were a few different heats, and they had the, what do you call it? Why have I gone blank in it? So they had the semifinals, and then they narrowed it down to 20 girls in the final, and then they flew us all to Mexico that year.
Wow.
Yeah,
so how many girls started out? Like a couple hundred or something?
I think back then there would be between 500 and 800 girls enter.
Nowadays,
it's a lot more. Now in the pageant industry, there must be 10,000
girls. Thousands, huh?
Yeah, now it's bigger because I think if you win a pageant, you really can move on. I mean, a lot of the girls, for me, I never cared about coming to the Miss World or the Miss Universe. For me, it was great and it was exciting. But for me, I just always saw the modeling as kind of a direct link to get into TV. It was always about TV for me.
Right.
That's what I wanted to do, the TV hosting.
Yeah. Now, so the modeling, so did you start that early as well?
Yeah,
in your life?
I was signed with an agency called Crawford's in London, and Crawford's back then was the leading commercial agency. So it was really fun to be with them. I remember going in on my first ever, maybe it was my second meeting with them, and I met the two people running the agency, and they sat either side of me. They went, no, her hair's too blonde, her eyebrows are too thin. So they sent me away and they said, right, we want your hair, get it back to your natural dark rather than the bleached blonde Swansea look that I've always had. So they wanted me, there was a phase where I went short and darker and I grew my eyebrows darker, and that's what they wanted. They
really?
Would tell you exactly, lose a little bit of weight, grow your eyebrows.
Wow.
Yeah.
So they picture like you in a certain way, and that's what they want you to become.
Yeah, they want to market you a right way. So
right.
I was always the girl next door, smiley, teeth, you know.
Yeah, that's it. You know, I mean, being in front of the camera, you get to be seen, but you don't get to make a lot of decisions. You know, I mean, the thing is, you're the subject of the picture.
You're just a product.
Yeah, exactly. You know, you're the painting in the picture. You know, the painter is the photographer, the director, the producer, whoever. You know, they have the ideas. They have the visions, and then you stand there and you become the beautiful girl that stands in this particular way and does this and does that. And it's amazing, but it gets your face out there for sure, huh?
Yeah, I think what you touched on, Sam, is with the industry, all talent, whether you're a model or whether you're an actress, you're all put into a niche. And it's funny, even now when my agent says, oh, I've put you forward for this job, I say, okay, tell me what it is. She goes, blonde, bombshell, hot wife. I don't know. I get those, do you know what I mean? There's certain words that my agent knows. I'll put Liz forward for that one.
Yeah.
European, socialite, upmarket, because of the accent, but I'm not upmarket at all, you know? So, but it's funny. It's how people see you, and you are a brand, you are a product, and you should fit a niche.
Yeah, definitely. So so you built your own name and everything. Now, so out of, you said 500-600 girls and stuff, they narrowed it down to 20, you said? And so at that point, what do you have to do in order to... so wait a minute. So it's 20 in the pageant, right?
20 in the final.
In the final.
Year.
Okay. And then the pageant begins and everything. You prepare for it, right?
Yeah.
Did you have any coaching or anything? Because you did say you have to learn about it.
Do you know what? I was very fortunate. I had a model. She was a top model in Italy at the time from Wales called Candice. And she sponsored me, as in she got on the phone to car company. They sponsored me. I had my own car. She got on the phone to dress companies. They sent me dresses, swimsuit companies. She literally would train me every day, get up, swim 50 laps in the swimming pool before I even ate. So, yeah, she was very, very good. We were determined to get me on that platform of winning.
Wow. So now, so they ask you questions. The pageant back then, was it pretty much the way they are now? I mean, they ask you questions. There's a bikini. There's nightgown.
What do you mean nightgown?
Nightgown.
I don't know which kind of fashion TV watching. Yeah. So yeah, evening wear, swimwear, and what else is there? Yes, I guess there'd be a daytime round back then as well. And in fact, also, I remember a sports round. So you had to kind of go on stage and do dance moves.
Oh, really?
Yeah. But that was my strong point because I've been doing dance since I was about 3. So the dance I always loved.
Awesome. Yeah. Awesome. So, I mean, how did it feel? So they narrowed it down to what? The first step is to narrow it down to 10 or something?
Normally they do. I think when we were in Mexico, they just went straight down to second runner-up, first runner-up, winner.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So because there was only 20 of us and we were, it was like an international pageant for Miss Great Britain because all of us girls were together for 10 days in Mexico.
Right.
And that was very unusual. It was the first time a British pageant had been taken out of the UK. And
so it wasn't an international one, though, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it was only British girls.
Yeah, I mean, I then went on to do international pageants.
Right.
So I went to Vegas. There was Miss Hawaiian Tropic. I did Dream Girl Bikini. I did Queen of Tourism. And then there was, of course, the Miss Universe in Vegas, too. So,
yeah.
You know, there was...
So it becomes like a profession after a while.
It is actually a job, you know? And
you
try and do personal appearances and get as much money as you can. And I was a university student at the University of Wales, Cardiff, studying journalism.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, you know, living that exciting life of flying all over the world, going to Taiwan, I went to Malaysia, South Africa, America, Mexico in a year was just, my passport was busy. It was great as a student.
Wow, I'm sure, yeah. As a young woman and stuff, you know, get to have all this attention.
Yeah, it was either that or working a bar job.
Yeah. I know. Well, it's cool you were able to make something out of it, you know, because I think some girls, you know, they win or whatever, and they just move on, you know, they don't make a big deal. Yeah.
I think winning a pageant, a lot of the times, I think in America it's very different. I think you have a whole team behind you, but when you win a British pageant, a lot of the winners and the girls, I think they presume that fame's going to come to you just like that.
Yeah.
And it doesn't. Everything is like a ladder. You're just climbing every...
Yeah, because there's so much competition for everything. You know, I mean, everybody wants the same thing that you do. And you really have to know what you're doing, you know. And so that's why I know about the preparation for the shows and that you have to learn it and so forth. Because we had a couple of women here who were... Miss Alabama, Miss Arkansas.
Oh, I'd love to hear their accents.
Yeah, they're great, you know. And so they opened a company where they actually train girls to become pageant professionals, you know. And so that's how I learned that it's not just I want to be there, you know, and
But there must be a lot of competition, I think, with the pageant trainers, too, because if you start training a girl, you want her to win.
Yeah.
So it's not like, you know, you have the pushy mum. You now have the pushy pageant trainer, too. It's huge business.
That's true, yeah.
It's a big business. I know a girl right now, Katie, bless her. I think she's about 20, 21, 22. And she entered Miss, I don't even know some of the terms and places in California yet. I want to say Agora Hills. I think she may have won that one. And then she went on to Miss Santa Monica. She's just come first runner-up. And now I think she's looking at Miss Malibu. So it's a huge industry because you're really trying to get on that national level to the Miss
USA.
That's
true. And that's how you start, huh? You have a local pageant and then a state pageant. And you know.
I mean, it's a funny world, this pageant industry. But you know what it does? I think the reason girls still do it is... even if you are, say, Miss Alabama or Miss Arkansas or Miss Great Britain, I think the minute you put that, when your agent submits you for big leading Hollywood roles or even supporting roles, like I went for one, which is just one line in a huge film, but there was 500 girls that went for it.
Wow.
Yeah. And, you know, it's funny. I think the minute your agent says, oh, she's Miss Great Britain, you know, producers and directors are more interested to see you. They think you've got something. It opens up the door. It gets you in.
Yes.
And, you know, it's, I guess it's a little bit of intrigue. It's part of your brand before you even walk in the door.
Right. And I mean, and I can imagine it would, I mean, did it go to your head? I mean, you're thinking, wow, you know, I'm the most beautiful woman in Britain, you know?
No, not at all. I think the funny thing is I wasn't the most beautiful in the competition. I really say that. I think I was the funniest.
Okay.
I don't know.
They look at a sense of humor too.
Well, I don't know. I think it depends how you answer questions.
Look at personality,
Yeah, and you know, I guess on stage I love performing. So you know, for me, holding a microphone. I know when I went to Taiwan, I won a competition called Dream Girl Bikini, And I definitely, the reason I impressed the judges is I started speaking in Mandarin. I said, really? "Ni hao, mom." You know, I don't remember it now. This is years ago. But I said something like, "Good evening, Taiwan. It's lovely to be here." And I said that in that language. Wow. And all of a sudden, people stood up and clapped. Now, no other girl said that. So, you know, use your brains to
win. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, exactly. Wow. It's just a little bit, you know, if I was going to Wales, I'd learn Croeso. You know, we have our own language too. So, pageants is funny, but it's a big business.
Yeah.
It's something I'll always be connected to, but lots more going on.
Yeah, I mean, that's another feather in your cap, you know, a big one rather, you know. And so so I would imagine it's open doors for you, right? Like where you've gone and stuff. So now you said you like hosting on TV and things like that. Is that what you were saying?
Well, I think that's probably what I've been known for over the last, let's say, I've been a host for 12 years. Probably.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah, the last 5 years in the UK, I was hosting interactive late night game shows on some of the major networks, which was so much fun.
Uh-huh.
You know, because when things are live and unscripted, anything can happen. And when you've got four or five cameras on you in a studio, absolutely anything you could say anything, you can do anything. I used to kind of pull faces. And I love live television. It's just one of the most exciting formats. I don't think you get a lot of that in America. You don't get these live interactive game shows.
The viewers call in and stuff?
Yeah, the viewers call in. We legally had to have a call every, I think it was 90 seconds or every 2 minutes. So it's fast television. Hello, what's your name? What's the answer to the game?
Right.
It was fast,
that's pretty
fun,
cool.
Furious.
Yeah. No, they don't have games like that now that I know of, you know, but it's a good idea, you know.
You don't have it because there's a rule on the premium rate phone numbers. But if that ever changes, you'd see that happen in America.
Really?
Yeah.
But what does that mean with a premium?
So, for instance, it would cost a viewer, you know, I guess the equivalent be like $1.
I see. When they call in, like those 900 numbers and stuff.
So it hasn't been allowed to happen in America, but I'm sure that'll change.
I see, because contestants are not supposed to pay to be part of the show or something?
Maybe. I think that's how it is in America. But, you know, if you want to create a prize fund, where can the prize fund come from? I guess it's like a lottery.
Right.
You're not going to have a lottery unless people buy a ticket, right?
That's true, yeah.
Because that's where the money comes from.
Right.
So it's kind of like passing it back.
Right. Yeah. Sounds like a pyramid scheme to me.
pyramid schemes are something else. I remember years ago, pyramid schemes were so hot. I remember a group of friends going, "Come on, Liz, come on a Tuesday night to this group," and everybody puts money in. And I think you had to have something like 1,000 or 5,000 to join this group. And I sat there and I listened to everything, and I was like, "Wow, it's really good for the people on the top, isn't it?
Right.
What about the people on the bottom?
You're
stuck in a system, but you're gonna work for like a year."
So they tell you, "Oh, you're gonna get up there, you know, just, you know, pretty soon you'll have people below you, blah 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 blah."
I think it works, but I don't want to be part of that. I'm from the old school.
It
Welsh
doesn't work.
Valleys,
it only works to a few people,
tradition.
Like you said, you know, the founders.
I think if you're always on the top, you're laughing, guys.
Yeah.
But if you're from the working class Welsh valleys and you're not on top, you just work every day for your honest wage and you just work hard, right?
There you go.
Yeah.
There you go.
I don't want to get into that.
So now, at what point? After the pageant, did you continue with just pageant, or did you do modeling? Did you do anything else?
I started modeling on a TV show called This Morning.
Mm-hmm.
This Morning, I guess, is a bit like your Kelly and Michael here in America.
Uh-huh.
It's like a chat show, and when they had fashion, I would always be one of the models there. And I was always so smiley, and I'd find the camera. So I got rebooked all the time, which was great. So I enjoyed doing that. And then I kept hassling the producer. I kept saying, "Don't you ever need a presenter? Don't you ever need a host?"
Uh-huh.
And she'd look at me and laugh and keep just booking me for the modeling job, just to smile. And then one day, I remember her name was Dimpna. She said to me, "You know what, Liz? There's a TV channel looking for a host." And really? She said, "Yeah, it's also owned by Granada. It's up in Manchester. It's Man United TV." So, you know, the football team.
Uh-huh.
So I phoned up the producer and didn't hear back because I didn't live in Manchester.
Mm.
And I hassled him. I said, "You know what? I'm going to be in Manchester tomorrow if it makes a difference." And I got up on the train and I went to see him. And I said, "You know that I'm the girl for this show." And he said, "Do you know anything about football?" And I went, "No, but I know a few football players."
Yeah, there you go. I know
and
the hot
he
ones.
Just, he just looked at me as if, oh my goodness. I said, but I could get you some exclusives. We never did get any exclusives, but he just loved my personality. He said, you'd be great on this.
Really? So he did hire you?
Yeah, and I did the Manchester United TV. That was one of my first breaks. Yeah.
That's cool. Are they still like a hot team? I mean, they used to be like, when I was a kid, they were the best team ever.
I think they are, but now we're seeing, my home city, I think, used to be in the, I want to say the fourth division, I've got no idea, but Swansea City is now absolutely one of the best teams in the country, and it will play against Manchester United. So, yeah, I got to say, woohoo, yogi yogi Swansea. Yeah,
now you know a little bit more about soccer or football, right?
No, I don't. No. I know nothing. I know David Beckham's just retired.
Yeah, there you go. I remember George Best. Do you remember him?
Yeah.
He was like the biggest on Manchester United, I remember. That's when I was a kid. You know, it shows you how old I am.
Oh,
you know?
George Best will always be remembered as, of course, the god of football. But what a sad life.
Yeah,
you know, bless him.
Why? What happened to him?
Well, he turned out to be, I don't know. Can I say it on air?
You can say whatever the fuck you want here.
All right, there you go. He drunk a lot. Mm. Yeah, he ended up having problems with the alcohol, battling
really?
That.
Really? Wow. Yeah. You see, and it happens to a lot of famous people. I always say that, you know, people are not prepared for fame like this, you know, for such attention paid to them, you know. And I think what happens is that, you know, at first you enjoy it, you don't know how to deal with it, you start acting out and stuff. And maybe, you know, after you your star fades, I think you start having problems, you know.
Yeah,
it's like,
I
used to be big, now people don't care about me, things like that, you know. So I think there's a lot of different factors in becoming famous and that can drive you to drugs and drinking and stuff.
Do you know what I think a lot of it is? I think when you're on top and you're getting so much attention, you're going to these fancy parties, you're going to fancy restaurants, you gather a group of people around you that are very fake.
Right.
So, you know, on my last 2 years before I moved to LA, I know that, you know, I was invited to so many red carpet premieres and parties, and I would have a lot of people around me that I ended up realizing, are you really my friends?
Yeah.
And you question it, and you realize, you know what? I don't think, if I didn't have this glamorous life and I was on TV right now and, you know, I wear beautiful clothes that get lent to me and I go to red carpet events, I don't think you'd be around. And some of the, I think what's true is when I moved to America, I saw a lot of those friends just disappear because I couldn't give them anything more in London. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
And I think when people, maybe if you become super famous, I think you have all the attention. And I think you've got to be careful. I think if you have your group of friends around you that are very close and you knew them before you became famous, I think you'll stay okay.
Yeah.
But I think if you have all these hangers-on and parasites, and let me tell you, there are so many people around.
Right.
That are like that, people that just want to grab onto your coattails.
Right.
I think that's when you have the problem, because when you stop being famous or you don't have the money anymore, they go, right?
They're gone.
You turn around and you're like, where's Bob? Oh, he disappeared.
And you're alone and you turn to alcohol,
yeah.
Wow, that's pretty sad. Yeah, he was, is that what he's considered, like the god of football?
I think he probably was back then. Yeah. I put him in the same, was he the same time era as Pelé?
Yeah.
Pelé was probably...
Yeah, Pelé was from Brazil.
Yeah.
And he was the best. He was considered the best in the world at one time, yeah.
I remember selling on British TV. I used to do some of the shopping channels in between game shows. And I remember selling shirts signed by Pelé.
Really?
And they would sell so fast before we even gone, ooh, let's open this auction.
I know. I mean, soccer is so big around the world. You know, it's only here that people don't really care about it. It never caught on.
Yeah, it's
you
true.
Know? Even with Beckham and everything, it doesn't matter. I knew that even if he came here, it's not going to help. I mean, America has been trying to revive soccer for so many years, decades, and it never happens.
Why do you think that's never happened?
Because I think we have football and baseball here and basketball, which dominate.
Yeah.
But mainly football, because the American football, you don't have anywhere else in the world. You know, you have rugby and stuff, but you don't really have American football. So I think that's the pastime here, you know, as opposed to
soccer. Do you think what it could be, Sam, is I've noticed that the athletes in America are super athletes.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when you look at, like, the basketball, some of the guys are, what, 6'9", 6'8", or something, and really built so big and strong. Now, UK football is about lean athletes, and they can run fast, and their body's very different. Do you think that... Because America has the history of the African-American, I think you're looking at super athletes, taller, stronger, bigger.
Right.
And I think maybe football is for the lighter guy. Do you think that could be anything to do with it, or is it just me looking at men's bodies?
Yeah, you looking at men's bodies, because there's a lot of men that are not that big, and they can play soccer just fine. But no, I don't know. You know, I'm just saying that I don't think it's ever been the culture here, and that's why. You know, I mean, in other countries in the world, you go back centuries, you know.
Mm-hmm. We play a lot of rugby. Wales' game is not football, it's rugby.
Yeah, I know. I know. When I was in South Africa, they loved rugby there too, you know.
Is it a little bit like the U.S. football? But I guess
it's
rugby,
like
you're not covered and protected.
No, and it's rougher, and yeah, it's not. It's similar, but it's not the same.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, I mean, you definitely don't wear the helmets and all the protective gear that they do here when you play rugby.
Oh, yeah. We say that rugby is the real man's sport in
Wales.
Yeah,
there you go.
They get down rough in the mud. It rains all the time, so they're going to come back. Doesn't matter what color your shirt is, I guess, by the time
it's
you leave,
muddy.
It's brown.
Yeah. It's always muddy. Wow. So at what point did you decide you're going to leave the UK and move here? What made you decide that?
Well, I left Wales after university, and I went to London.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I did as much as I could in London. I loved it. I live right next to, I've got an apartment right next to Chelsea Football Stadium.
Really?
So, yeah. So, love London. Must have spent a real good decade there. Enjoyed it. Did so much in TV. And I think all paths led here. I met a few agents. I met one from ICM. I met one from IMG. And everybody was saying, come to America. And I just thought, yeah, why not?
Yeah,
let's
exactly.
try something new. And I like a challenge. You know, I'm kind of somebody that's quite strong and fiery, and nothing's going to put me down. So I can't, whatever challenge there is, I'll take it.
That's true. Had you been in LA before you moved here? I mean, did you know what you were moving to?
Did I know what to expect?
Yeah, not everybody does, you know.
Yeah, I came over to LA when I was Miss Great Britain, so years ago. And, you know, I must have been like 20 or 21 at the time. And I ran back to the UK. I was scared by it. Vast city, didn't know anyone. It's the other side of the world. I knew that if I came here in my early 20s, I would be chewed up and spat out.
Really?
I wasn't ready for it. No, I wasn't strong enough. I needed to do everything I did in London before I came here.
Mm.
And the good thing meant that, you know, I came back and forth for 10 years, built up my contacts so that when I did come out here, I knew casting directors, producers, directors, agents, managers. So I had it kind of all prepared.
Right.
Yeah.
Wow. Mm-hmm. So then you moved here, and did you know anybody here at all?
I knew 3 or 4 people.
Okay.
And can I tell you, it's so funny, the two girls that I did know, I'm not friends with them anymore.
Really?
Both of them weren't very nice talking about me behind my back.
Really?
It's like, wow, does LA change people?
It does.
Yeah, it does, right? I think people come here, and if your dreams don't get found or you don't start doing well, I think you kind of get a little bitter. And
you think so?
Yeah. I think I've always said something, that if something doesn't work out, and I've been very blessed. I've only ever earned money from talking, I guess, right? Mm. On TV, hosting or acting. I don't know anything else. I was a waitress. I wasn't even a waitress. I worked behind a bar pouring tequila down people's necks when I was 18, right, in Swansea. That's all I've ever, that's the only ever job I've ever done. So I've always worked, touch wood, through my talent, right, and probably my looks. And I can tell you that when you come to LA, it's another ball game.
Yeah.
It really is. And I really do understand. I've seen a lot of British girls come and go, live here, stay. And I've always said, touch wood, if I don't earn money, if I do not survive from my talent, from entertaining, producing, just literally either producing, hosting, or acting, I'll go home.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
You know, I'm not going to put myself in a city away from my family, sacrifice, leaving my friends and family to really live in hell. I'm not going
to
do
bar,
that,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So I've been very blessed. And I always say to my family, if it doesn't work out, I'll come home.
Yeah, exactly.
And I couldn't
always
think
leave
of
the door open.
Yeah. You know, I've always got somewhere to run to, which is great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good thing. So good. So, and then you started getting to, so what did you start doing here?
First thing I did was CSI. Got off the plane, did CSI Vegas.
Really?
Had a co-star.
I had
5 lines, but they cut them. But
really?
I look good in it.
But you haven't talked about acting. How did you suddenly get into acting now?
I did theater as a teenager.
Oh, really?
So I was part of the Swansea Grand Theater School, which is a great place to learn. And I did a lot of theater. So I was in Joseph. I studied Shakespeare for 3 years.
Really?
Don't laugh. I
oh
did.
My God.
So if we shadows have offended, think but this and all is mended. I did. I only because I was in a dance school from the age of 3, and she said to me at age 13, what do you want to do? And I said, I don't want to. I'd already failed at all the rounds going to the Northern Ballet School in London. That was my dream, to be a ballet dancer. Oh. Age 9, age 11, you audition. And I failed. I was too tall and I was too heavy. It wasn't going to work out for
really?
Me as a ballet
wow.
dancer. Uh-uh. You don't get 5'9", you know, big bone ballerinas. You just don't get it. You know, nowadays you're kind of Russian and you're 5'1" and you're really slim and beautiful.
Right.
Nah, it that didn't work for me. So after that, I decided I wanted to be a TV presenter, as we call it in the UK, TV host mm-hmm. in America.
Right.
And my teacher said to me, well, love, I'm really sorry to tell you, but if you want to work in that industry now, innit, you're going to have to lose your Welsh accent, because that's not going to work. You really got to have the Queen's English, love. So I'm going to send you off to a Shakespeare dialect coach for the next few years.
Wow.
So that's why I learned to speak differently, so that I could wow. Get a step ahead. Yeah.
Did you feel that learning Shakespeare has helped you at all? Because, I mean, it's considered such an important thing for people to learn.
Especially with actors.
Yeah.
Yes, because a lot of it is written. Is it written in rhyming? I can't remember. It's years ago. Rhyming couplets or... I don't know. The way that it's written, I think there's a certain way to breathe, certain way to talk about it, to say it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Shakespeare. I mean, he was an amazing writer.
Right.
And I think if you're British and an actress, you definitely have to pay homage to Shakespeare.
Yeah. It's just that it's sort of like an old language, you know, the way that you have to really understand it.
Oh, yeah. A lot of it I didn't understand. But then that's like learning Chaucer or William Blake as well. You know, there's so many writers that you just get lost in and you can have your own opinions on. And
yeah, exactly.
You know, academics can say, no, where did you get that from?
So that's cool. So you landed here and you landed a role in CSI.
Mm-hmm.
And so did you decide you're going to pursue acting here? Or, I mean,
no, I first came out to be a host.
So that's why you came.
Yeah.
Okay. So, but you just took the acting gig because it came up.
Yeah, I think the thing is, when you're in this town, who's going to say no to the acting?
Yeah.
So I came here to really host shows, and I thought there were so many opportunities. It'll be, you know, it'll be a blast. Something will happen. I hosted a few pilots,
mm-hmm.
which was fun. So I did one for Fox. I did another for OWN. So I hosted some pilots when I first came. I've only been here 2 years, so this was in the first year.
Mm-hmm.
And then I suddenly realized, I kept meeting producers and directors when I would go and be invited to industry events. And every time I think it's the one occasion, I met a director called R. Alice Fraser. Mm-hmm. And we were talking, and he said, oh, I'm a film director. And I went, oh, you've got to meet my friend that mm-hmm. I was with. And I passed him off to my girlfriend Ellie. I said, she's an actress, you two should talk. And I walked off because I wanted to go to the bar and get a drink, being Welsh. And the next day he'd found my website, he emailed me, and he said, you're the only girl I've ever met in this town that's ever done that.
Really?
And I said, really? And he said, well, he said, you're a host. I'm like, yes. He said, but you've got to consider acting too. So it took him about a week to hassle me, kept calling me, and I'd given him my phone number by then. And, you know, he kept asking me, he said, let's meet for coffee. And I said, listen, no, he said, let's meet for dinner. I said, listen, I don't do dinner with people I don't know, but I will do lunch. Let's do lunch in Larchmont, little village, love the area.
Yeah.
And on the day, it was so funny, my agent called me, she said, you need to be in my office by 3. So I was like, okay, I can't do lunch at 1:30, that's not going to happen. So I text him in the morning, I said, listen, I can do coffee at 11, take it or leave it. He turns up, bless him, with his DVDs.
Uh-huh.
And he's like, these are the films that I've done. Have you not seen them? And amazing action films with big stars.
Really?
And, you know, we developed a friendship. And he then said, you know what? I think you should go meet this casting director. I went off to see Ricky Masler, told him my whole life story. She was like, oh, I love you. Bless you. You've worked so hard and you're British and I love the British actors. And she said, I'm going to send you off to 3 acting teachers. And I want you to decide which one you'd like to go with. These acting teachers are going to tell me if you can act. I was like, oh, okay. So I only asked one question. I got the details. And the only question I asked was, who's the toughest acting teacher? Because I thought, you know what? I don't want anyone to waste my time or just take my money. Because in this town, let's face it, so many people teach.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You don't know if they're any good at teaching, but you just give them your heart and your time and your money, right?
Yeah.
So I said, which one's the toughest? And she said, Leslie Kahn.
Mm.
I thought, okay. Yeah. So I went off to Leslie Kahn, got audited, and Leslie said to me, you're a freak. And I thought, wow, nobody's ever called me a freak. You know, I put that down with geek and nerd. And I'm like, yeah, I'll take that. Secretly, I am a little bit of a freak, but nobody knows. They just think I'm this blonde, vivacious, gorgeous girl next door, I guess, right? So I thought that was the biggest compliment of my life. And I said, why am I a freak, Leslie? She says, you're extreme right brain and highly visual. Wow. Now, I don't know whether she was just making that up, but it sounded great to me. Yeah. So I went, what does that mean, extreme right brain? She said, well, you're still like a little child. You still like playing and make-believe. And yeah, I said, I love butterflies. She said, so acting for you is just pick up the paper and just read it and just really stay in your right brain. Yeah. So that for me was fun. And then I went on her intensive course, and there was somebody that was very left brain there, and I didn't get on with him, obviously, being extreme right brain. And so very left brain is somebody that's more like accountant, somebody that's very logical, that would see the punctuation on a script rather than the feeling. Right. I'm the opposite. I only get the feeling. I could read a script and cry.
Right.
And what Leslie does is, you know, it's great being right brain, but you can't just turn up in an audition and be right brain and do the feeling. You've got to know where the punctuation is. You've got to know where the beats are. You've got to know. So she taught me all of that. And she taught this guy, Jack, who was a very famous actor in the 80s, but I just couldn't stand him. We just rubbed each other up the wrong way. And we had to rehearse with each other every day. Right. And one day he just turned around and said to me, you overact, Liz, that's your problem. And if you just realize you're good, you just wouldn't do that.
Wow.
And I think that was a breakthrough moment. I was just like, okay, just go with it. Just surrender.
It wakes you up a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we're out of time, Liz. Do you want people to find you? Twitter, Facebook, anywhere?
Absolutely. Liz _ Fuller on Twitter.
Okay.
And Liz at LizFuller.com, or I guess just find me Liz Fuller on Facebook.
There you go.
Yeah.
There you go. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining me. You're definitely a lot of fun.
Thank you.
A lot of stories and stuff, which is you've lived quite a few lives so far, so that's cool. And
I'll keep doing that too.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks everybody for listening, and we'll see you soon. Well, Monday, I guess.
So. Bye-bye.
You have been listening to Sam in the Morning, which airs every weekday from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. To get in contact with the show, please send email to info@latalkradio.com. Sam in the Morning is a production of LA Talk Radio. We say what we want.